All right, folks, if I could have your attention, we'll get started. Looks like everybody's back, and the fun, as Max Severin would say, the fun is about to begin. You've heard me talk about Leonard Paul. In fact, he's on the way. Now he's in the house, and he's got some cool stuff lined up to show us. He has his own material with regard to an introduction, so I'm going to let him tell you about his experiences and his backgrounds. I'll just sort of start it off in a very general way by saying that he does come from Vancouver, B.C., British Columbia, in Canada. Emily Carr, the academic institution there, very well known institution, where he has taught a number of courses in sound design for video games. He's done quite a bit of consulting work around the world and a lot of production of his own game sounds and other things, and I think it should be really interesting what he has to say about working with sound, recombining sound, remixing sound, and video as we go through the workshop. So, Leonard, it's a pleasure to have you. Welcome to Vancouver, USA, Washington State University, Vancouver, the Creative Media and Digital Culture Program. We're really happy to have you and interested to hear what you have to say.
Great. Well, thanks for inviting me and having me down. Yeah, my background is in audio, and that's what I'm currently doing. So right now, I'm actually employed full-time at Electronic Arts Canada. They make sports games primarily. So right now, I'm working on a game called NBA Jam. If anybody's played the arcade version of that, it's got a lot of rep there. So it's going to be cool. It's coming back for the Wii. So what I'm doing right now is I'm actually able to do music remixing. I'll also be doing a little bit of sound design and also what's called implementation. Basically taking the sound stuff and putting it into the game so that it works with the game system. So my background is that I started in 91 at Simon Fraser University up in Vancouver. And so I started in games in 94 at Electronic Arts. So the funny thing is that one of the other titles that I'm working on is NBA Live, and I started working on that game in 94. So NBA Live 95 is when it started, and I'm still working on it. It's like I'm not getting anywhere. So, and then the other game I'm working on is NHL, which is a hockey game, so I did some speech work on that. I guess I got to get some exercise and move the mouse around. I started, I guess, around 15 years ago in audio for games, but I did programming. So my background is actually in comp sci. So I have an honors in comp sci and then an extended music minor from SFU. And I'm slowly working on a master's degree from a school in France. Slowly, eventually that will get done. And besides that, yeah, I'm teaching off and on at Emily Carr. I just finished a class which is actually, oddly enough, really similar to what I'll be doing here. So I'll show you some of the work that we did there. And it was kind of workshop, hands-on stuff for more so arts students. Sounds like it's a bit more of a general focus here at the university. There, it's more of a university for art and design. I was in Berlin earlier this year, so I got to go out there. So I did a workshop there, and I also did a talk. And besides that, off and on, I've gone to various places and talked about game audio, and that's sort of my thing. But I also work in art a bit, so you'll see that I also did this thing in Surrey, which was concentrated on, I guess it wasn't too far from video games, but I reprogrammed Game Boy Advance to put my own sounds on there and my own graphics and stuff, and it got mounted in a frame and it's in the washroom there, so it's kind of fun. That actually had two previous incarnations, one at Victoria, where I think that's where I met you, James, is that right, at Interactive Futures?
Yes.
Like 2006 or something like that. And then it also got shown over in Zurich in Switzerland in the Cabaret Voltaire in the washroom there, which is kind of cool. So that's as far as an artist, that's kind of a bit of a claim to fame. I also worked in film. I did a soundtrack for the film The Corporation. It's like a documentary. So that was a lot of music, and that continues to play, which is good. Basically talks about sort of how the corporation exists and how it somewhat controls our lives in this weird way of a headless entity. What else? I don't know. Actually, maybe what I'll do is I usually don't ask questions or ask for fielding questions, but does anybody have a question off the top?
This is just random.
Yeah.
Have you done all the NBA lives?
No, not all. Oh, God, no. No, I'm a contractor, so I come off and on.
Off and on.
So this is my... this is my third one.
Oh,
so I worked on the first one, and then I worked on the one for the N64. Mm-hmm. So the Nintendo 64, it's like the cartridge-based one.
Right.
And then this one. So yeah, I've sort of... I've done other things.
Yeah.
So it's been this weird kind of like circuitous kind of like, yeah, coming back to where things started out. So yeah, it's been a wild ride. It's been fun. So yeah. Yes.
Were you there right at the start of Electronic Arts? Because you were so 15 years.
Yeah, I know. But they were actually around since like, Electronic Arts is actually quite like for games. It's one of the ones that has survived. I'm going to guess and say it started like in 85, because there's a prehistory to Electronic Arts that it's actually started in California, I'm pretty sure. And they did games like Archon, Adventure Construction Set, they did Deluxe Paint. And so they're a company before that. And the company that I started, like Electronic Arts Canada, actually was known as Distinctive Software. And there's this guy, Don Matrick, who's quite well known within games. He's part of, I think he's part of Microsoft now. And so he started this company, like Distinctive Software, in 90, well, maybe a little bit before that, but I think they got bought out in 91 by Electronic Arts. And then, as far as I know, Electronic Arts Canada is like the largest game studio in the world. So it's in Burnaby and it's quite massive. So there's, as you know, the economy is kind of up and down, so they actually let go of a lot of people. So if you're hoping to get into games, it's still a good time, but it's sort of oscillating. So they have between 1,000 and 1,500 workers there. So it's pretty big. So they have their own campus there. Like you can take yoga classes. They've got a whole basketball court in there. They've got like I don't think it's regulation, but it's a quite large soccer field. They've also got like for whatever reason they have a beach volleyball court. And they have an amazing studio. Studio A, like the audio studio there, is incredible. It's a total, obviously, surround setup. It's configurable on the inside, so they have all these moving walls and stuff. And then for looks, they have like a grand piano in there, but they never use it. So it's a pretty amazing place to work. Yeah. Are there other questions? Not so much. All right. I'm trying to think of anything else out of my own history that might be useful for you. I don't know. I mean, like, I play music. I've done, like, drums and bass and keyboards and all that kind of stuff. I've worked with dance, worked a bit with theater. But these days, yeah, I focus on working with games. And also, I want to get back into film, but documentary film is not necessarily the best way to make money. Got that totally money focus, but it's sort of like I do the game thing for cash, and it's also for interest. Right now, working on music is awesome. I've been saying to a lot of people, it's like, I can't believe I get paid to do music by the hour. It's like, it's totally rare, and I don't take that for granted at all. So I'm trying to make some really good tracks for the jam, and hopefully that will travel a bit. I think it's going to be a really fun game. So that's the one that I'm focused on. Besides that, maybe what I'll do is I'll give an outline for what we'll be doing for the workshop, because that way I'm sure we'll run into some technical stuff along the way, so it's always good to get things started at the beginning, and then we can just see where we land. There we go. So hopefully you might have a copy of this. Maybe, yes, no, hands. Has anybody seen this document?
No.
Anybody? I've seen it. Okay, a couple other people, so that's good. All right. So, yeah, this is what we're going to be doing. So the overview is that you've already done this, right? Installed Pure Data Extended. So that's on the machines here, right? Okay. Does anybody know anything about either Pure Data or Max MSP? Anyone? No? Okay, that's fine. I was kind of thinking that'd be the case. The thing that's nice about this is that I've done various workshops, either like obviously in universities or, you know, whatever, other places. And the reason why I like working with Pure Data is that it's open source. So it's free, and it's a visual programming language. So that means it's kind of nice because you can see the way that functions like behaviors get put together. Whereas when you're, I don't know if you've, you might not have done a lot of programming, but anyways, there's a lot of programming where it's a lot of typing, and then if you like, you know, HTML, if you miss like, you know, whatever, like one of those greater thans or something, it totally screws up your page. And yeah, I don't know, I like to work with digital stuff where I can be really messy. I'm kind of a messy person. I create a big mess, and then I clean it up later, you know. But while I'm working on stuff, I find that Pure Data is kind of nice. Once I show you my patch, you'll get an idea of what I mean when I'm messy. So yeah, this is the first step to do, and you can. The nice thing is that you can get this, you know, for your own computer. So let's take a quick step back, and I'll say that this is my web page. So it's videogameaudio.com, so it's fairly easy to remember, which is nice. I got kind of lucky with the domain name. And yeah, hey, look at that. Invited to give an interaction design workshop focusing on audio. That's happening right now. So I don't mean to tweet about it. That was 2 days ago. You know, I was talking about, I don't know, I should have just shown you the Twitter link. And anyways, okay. So if we go down from videogameaudio.com, you get past. If you're interested in learning about game audio, this section here, it doesn't look very inviting because there's no pictures, but I'll put some pictures there eventually. These are some YouTube video links on how game audio works. And so it's a really nice, gentle way of just getting your feet wet and seeing how game audio works from behind the scenes, like if you're actually working in a studio. And then down here you see a picture of myself. That was when that was in Berlin earlier this year. And then there was the School of Interactive Arts and Technology that's part of Simon Fraser. It's in a different chunk of it. And then, look at that, Interactive Futures 2006. I've got a couple videos there. But then the interesting part for you, of course, is if you click on this, the overview, then you'll get that PDF that I was showing you there. All right, so if you're able to follow along, that's good. Okay, so I click on that, and here's our happy PDF. So, just saying now, let's play with this project. So this is a student project, and the way that I worked this class is that I had a whole bunch of little building blocks, you know, like little Lego kind of things, but more functional. And so the students were able to take these chunks, and I'm not, like, if you're getting kind of, you know, reclined there, a little sweaty, thinking about the idea of programming, don't worry. You'll not really be programming. What I'll show you how to do is break stuff, okay? Because I think that's the way that I found it. I learned, and with break stuff digitally, usually it's kind of okay. Because if you break stuff and you're like, okay, it's not working, then I can help you, right? That's the great thing about having a workshop. So you get to break stuff in public, or at least on your machine. And if you break things really far, then I'll come out and, figured out. So this is a student project where she had taken some of the elements and then she put them together. Basically, we came at it from a high-level perspective, which is what James was talking about, which just seems to be, well, it actually is the focus of this course, is where you think creatively and then you think, okay, technically, how do I realize this, you know? How do I get this to happen? You know, whereas bottom-up thinking is more thinking like, these are the tools that I have, what can I make out of it? She had an idea of what she wanted to do, and I have a copy of that. I'll show you what it is. I brought it along. It's over here. Write-up, okay? So, the font's a little funky, but I'll make it a bit bigger. Okay, so we'll just look at the first paragraph here. It says, I wish to create a music mixing program that I can carry around on my USB and can be compatible with both Mac and Windows operating systems. Accompanied by video, the program would allow me to mix and match loops or entire songs. Right? So that was her idea. That's what I want to be able to do. So later on she said she wanted to sort of, there's a kind of a party focus here. So Pure Data allows this to happen. You know, programming is one of those things. It's like, it's sort of a necessary evil a lot of the times. When you really want to do fun stuff, I think, when it, with computers. So, Pure Data is cross-platform. It means that it'll run on Linux, Mac, PC. It's a little different on each, so sometimes the video codecs can be a little bit funky, but this is the project that she came up with. And so if you click on here, right, the Eugenia Dance Mix, then you, if you're connected to the web, then hopefully you should get a download for that. And I'll open it up, or at least pretend that I'm opening it up. And then you'll get eventually a folder. Okay. Is there anybody stuck so far?
Because sometimes you fall off the boat right at the beginning. It's kind of annoying. Is your player good so far? Good. See, nods.
Good. So, and we can open up that folder. And there's a little picture there that we can look at. This is just a screen grab. And if we go into the main patch folder, at the top of that, it has her name. And that's the thing that you should be able, on these computers, to double-click on, and that will hopefully open up Pure Data for you. All right? So it was called Eugenia Leung Dance Mix. Okay? Oh, look at that. Great. Wow. This is good. A lot of the times when I ask for software to be set up in my lab, it's pretty random. Some machines work, some machines don't. So I see a lot of... Yep, that one you double-click. Nope, just go open. Yep. And you should be good. Just figuring stuff out. You see the Gore speech ball. Okay, good stuff. Wow. Okay, perfect. So... this is the patch, okay, and this is Pure Data, all right. Sort of this is one of the easiest ways of seeing it. Is I guess I should. Has anybody done any programming like HTML or Flash, like action scripting? Okay, all right. So that's good. Action script, anybody? But more HTML though, right? So more sort of where you type in, yeah, okay. Yeah, with this, the way that it works is that you've got like these rectangular boxes, and those are sort of the functions. That's what does stuff. And then you've got these little cables that connect those things. So instead of it being a big script where it sort of, you know, starts at the top or whatever and it goes down, really, well, actually it does start at the top and goes down. The flow here goes down. So this says load bang, and that means when the patch loads, bang, like do this thing. So it pushes this number 8,000 into this, which is a function that says sample rate. So here it's setting the sample rate to 8,000. Okay. So we're not going to get a lot into programming, but at the same time, you know, it's sort of under the hood. Okay, so what does this patch do? Well, it's fairly simple. It takes four channels of audio, 1, 2, 3, 4, the boxes with the X's on them there, and then it puts a loop that you can choose, or that can randomly be put in there, and it starts looping that. So she wanted to be able to crossfade between two loops, but then also have stuff playing in the background as well. So these two loops here, those, the two on the left-hand side, those ones are totally random. And then the two on the right-hand side, they're actually sequenced. So you can actually step through specific loops, and you can put these little dots where you want the which loop you want it to be. So let's have a listen. It's going to sound really bad because for the web, I had to degrade the quality of the loops. But what we'll be doing in class is you get to add your own loops, which of course will sound so much better. So see, that's I purposefully brought in stuff that sounds horrible, and you're like, ah, I can do better than that. And you will, right? Okay, so let me hit the 1, because that's what it says. Press 1 to start, and we'll see if we get audio. Okay. Hey, there we go. That's working too. Awesome. Okay, I hit one and then. Oh yeah, that sounds great. Okay, so it sounds kind of confusing. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to turn all those off. If we looked at the README here, which is sort of what it says, see README box for more information, is that there's actually a whole bunch of keys that you can hit to do stuff. And so you can affect the loops in real time, which is nice. So here we've got channel 1, which means that box on the far left, and then channel 2. And then we've also got these channel 3 and 4, which we can pretty much ignore. We'll just work with two channels for now. Even just one channel is totally fine. So you can see if you hit Q, then it'll do a random file. W goes back to the previous file. So what happened is that there's a guy that made this patch for live music performance. And then the nice thing about things being open source is that he put it online, and then I just fix it. And so we can... that thing's finally downloaded. Okay, and then you can make the sound go in reverse, you can make it go half pitch, or you can make it go double pitch, in other words, twice as fast. You can randomize it jumping around within that file, that loop, or you can freeze and make it sort of sound like it's stuck in a certain spot, or you can scratch, okay? So let's try out some of that stuff and see what goes on there. And you'll also notice, of course, that there's video stuff happening there too, all right? So if I go back here, and I hit, I hit some mute stuff. So if I unmute, I'm going to hit E. Okay, so yeah, she chose these loops. Pop music type stuff. And you can kind of hear a loop. And if I hit Q. Oh yeah, there we go. And if you hit Q, you can go back to the previous one, right? You can hit distortion or scratch. That's the freeze. That's the stutter. That's going up. That's going down. Right? And then you can hit delay too, so. Okay. So, seeing as you don't have that much audio vocabulary, I'll try and bring that around a little bit. I guess I could use this. All right. Oops, that one's not so happy. All right. Okay, so it sounds like most of you have probably edited a waveform, though, visually, right? Yeah, okay. So, yeah, this is... So what happens is that you've got, you know, basically it stores the, I guess, well, whatever, the quantized signal over time, right? There's your signal level, and then this is through time, okay? So if we're talking about T reverse, that's the same thing, you know. If you play records, you can put spin the thing backwards, sound gets reversed. Instead of playing this way, you get to play it that way, all right? So that's pretty basic, all right? Easy enough. If you want it to be half pitch, that means that basically you take this whole thing and then in time you compress it, you squish it, okay? It's like having a record player and hitting the tone, you know, and you put the tone up. Being able to play things twice as fast might be a bit tricky unless you change the revolutions per minute, right? So that will make it play twice as fast, and then if you make it twice as long, that will half pitch would mean that it goes down, and then double pitch means that it goes faster. The randomize means that it will, the position pointer will jump around randomly, and it'll play little chunks, okay? Depending on how it's programmed, that will actually sound like sometimes like granulated sort of sound. Same thing with the freeze, is that it seems like it chooses one spot and then it just loops on that. If you've ever had a machine crash and it makes that annoying, like zzzz, right? It's because it's got a chunk of information that's in there that's been stuck. And then scratch, that's just, you know, I mean, the best way of thinking this is like the record player, is that if the position can move around, you know, like that. And then distortion, the way that that guy works, if we look at up here, we've got echo, and that means that you've got a duplication of the sound that's time delayed. So like, you know, scream across the Grand Canyon, right? Delay, echo. And then distortion means that you're making the signal a lot louder than it should be, and then it just sounds like a guitar amp, like it's exceeding the dynamic range that it's allowed, and then it starts changing the actual quality of the waveform. So, once again, those things are like... So, reverse. Right? The beats, they sort of sound like they're getting sucked instead of, you know, forwards. Then I've got... up. And that's... down. And we can... So you can hear that jumps around a lot. That stays stuck, freezing. And scratching. Alright. So, any questions yet? Yes?
When you make a loop or whatever, and you might put sections of different pieces of music together to make a loop, when you push something like reverse or whatever, does it just do that one section that you're in, or does it do the entire loop?
It will do the entire loop, but with this thing, the idea is that it's really short. So if you wanted to have, if you wanted to, like, aesthetically, like your artistic idea, if you wanted to sort of play two different songs against each other, then you would put those in two separate files, and then you would have those play, rather than thinking, like, you've got this section that's a whole chunk of memory that it's going to play throughout the whole thing, and then it's going to loop small parts of those. Usually, with the way that this is set up, the loops are quite short. So it'll reverse the whole loop that it's currently playing. Yeah.
So essentially, do you have to import like any audio files that you want? Because you said that essentially this is supposed to be on flash drives, so you could take it to a party.
Yeah.
So it's like a virtual, almost like a virtual DJ booth.
Yeah.
Where you can mix and mix, remix, and do all that stuff
with visuals. It's that easy.
And you don't need to turn it over to the computer.
Yeah, and that's the idea of doing sort of live PA, live public address, or live electronics, you know, or a laptop show, right? Is that you would construct a system like this, or you would put the loops in a system like this, and then you would just, you know, make something fun. Whatever.
Where is the visual player? Like, what channel? Is it an extra channel, or...?
Where is the visual coming in?
Yeah.
Oh, can I get to the visual in a bit?
Okay.
I just want to stay focused on layer right now. If I may. Well, yes, I'll come back to that. Definitely. Yes?
I was wondering, around the cue point, like, can you program something in there where it would, set up cue points before you could reverse just in a certain section of the waveform?
No. Not with this one. No, you would have to go in there and start rewiring stuff. So, yeah, it's not functionally, it wouldn't allow you to do that. The thing with the way that the person that basically created a sort of live sort of instrument is that he wanted to make it so that it was quite random. And so, yeah, the more control that you want, you can definitely put it in there. But, the students really wanted, they were like, well, just, you know, because when you hit a key, you can't select an actual sample, just randomly use one out of that current folder. And so, yeah, some people wanted to have more control over it so that they would be like, okay, I want this to play for a while and loop, and then when I'm bored of that, then I want to go to the next thing that makes sense. I don't want it to just jump around and play some sort of random loop. So that was the reason why I put that sort of sequencing thing on the side there. I'll show you that. So what you could do if you wanted to is you could make it, so that these... not only sequence the selection of audio loops, but they could also sequence which effect you wanted as well. So that would be a really easy change to do. And the nice thing, once again, is pure data is that you can actually just change it. So all the code is right here. You don't have to recompile. It's actually running as we speak, which is kind of neat. So let's try that out.
Okay, so I'm playing. Let's see if I can remember this. That's attractive. Okay, so anyways, it's going to be hard to see, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to step through channel number 3, which is here. So it's channel number 3. And it's hard to see, but it's a little green, like it's highlighted. And so what happens is that I can select which loop I want to play. It's not going to be random. So I can move backwards and forwards through that sequence. These samples are kind of cut up, so they don't sound that good, but you'll be able to hear at least that they're changing. So, okay, so there's that, and then I can go back, right? And then I can. Right?
What are you using?
Oh, which keys? Yes. With that, what I'm doing is I need to, as the operator, I need to turn on channel 3. So currently, because there's no X there, I have it muted. So if I hit R, that will unmute it. And then I use the brackets, the square brackets, to move backwards and forwards through that sequence. So that's what I'm doing to move through that. Yeah. Yeah, it takes a while to understand the keys, the way that he's programmed them. But it's kind of interesting what you get once you get used to it, because you can hold down multiple keys at the same time and actually get delay and distortion at the same time. Whereas other interfaces, they don't allow you to do that. They're kind of like, they're more mutex, like mutual exclusion. Like you can only, like a radio button, it's either in or out. You can't select multiple things at the same time. It'll make the other buttons pop out. Yes.
When you say they're short loops, how long are you talking for?
The main limiting factor here was that I wanted to put all the projects online, so they were quite short. So that means, like, musically, about a bar long or so, or even shorter. These ones you can hear, it's almost like just a quarter note. It's just repeating that one sound. And that's just because I didn't have a lot of server space. But when we work on it, you can make your loops fairly long, a few bars long, but I wouldn't make them excessively long. Because what this program does is that it will take the loop length, and then it wants to be able to make it so that the loops are all at the same tempo. So if you have a loop that's really long and another loop that's very short, it will actually take the short one and stretch it out so that it matches the same length. So they should all be roughly the same length in time. And then that way, they won't get, it won't sound like, you know, the chipmunk kind of thing for that long one when it gets squished up, right? So these are things, like, if you're not used to audio, we'll mess around a little bit, and you'll see sort of what happens with that. But when we make our loops, they should be roughly the same. Okay. I think we're almost there, actually. It's starting to... any questions otherwise about the audio stuff? And we will get to the audio section, but I think we want to get our hands wet with the audio side of things. So, what I'm thinking... Do most people have access to, like, MP3s that they can get onto their computer? Probably? Yeah. Okay. Another thing is that we could borrow from YouTube, right? You can use the Clip Napper and download audio as well, once you get it into iMovie. So that's what I'm thinking that we could do. So, if you could, it's kind of like, this is like a magic trick or something. You need to try and get an MP3 file that you want to put into this program, and then we'll put it into Audacity, which should be fairly easy. Okay? So, is anybody sort of nervous about the idea of getting a piece of audio? I can come around too that way.
I have headphones. Anybody like headphones? I have some here.
All right. Headphones.
Okay, so yeah, all you need is some MP3 files that you can get onto your computer. And
okay, so I'm just finding my own MP3 here, and
many actually needing MP3s already in iTunes on your individual computers. You can look there and switch to mine.
So yeah, if you're able to find something that's kind of loopy, you know, bob your head to that, then that's good. Okay, anybody nervous about the MP3 thing? So yeah, what I did for some people that were having a hard time or just, you know, whatever, just trying to get to music easily, is that you can just go to archive.org and there is a link to NetLabels. So this is archive.org and I went to the audio section, click. Okay, and then here scroll down to NetLabels and clicked again, and then from here I'm going to look at the Japanese one this time, Bumpfoot, there we go, and apparently they have about 280 items, and I just went to most downloaded items because I figured that was great, so Czech Korea and Electronic Band, oh nifty. So then you can click on that and have a listen. Right. I'm going to try and find one I actually like. Continue. Alright. Alright, that's a nice loop already. Alright, so you can, you're gonna take that one. Terra. And save it. Save link as. Save it on the desktop. And so, and then there was this, let me copy this, it's another piece of music that I wanted to do, Mr. Oizo, monophonic, oh, let's try and make this a little nicer, okay, there we go, okay, great, so I've just done a bit of data wrangling, getting our MP3s happy.
Everybody's trying to find the most perfect music. So the idea is...
Sorry?
That's right. Yeah. It's a fun one. So, yeah, we have two pieces of music that will allow us a little bit of contrast between the two loops so we can have it work better. Okay. So,
if I'm going to use Audacity because it's free, and I guess I didn't think about that. Well, hopefully this works. If not, then we'll have to take a route through QuickTime or something. But.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I think there's... You might be missing... There's an MP3 plugin that will allow you to actually... I can't remember if that's writing or reading MP3s. So what you can try to do from within Audacity is go open. And I just put mine on the desktop. So there's my song. Okay, so does this work for you? Are you able to open MP3s in Audacity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wow.
You can't export them.
Yes, perfect. That's good. That's
good. You can export waves.
Yeah, that works for me. Yeah, because we with loops, I'll tell you a little hint that you might have actually learned while you're doing stuff in Flash is that MP3s, they take the waveform and they actually figure out, rather than figuring out levels like within what's called the time domain, they actually figure out the frequencies that are in that signal, the same way that JPEG compression works, and they look at the frequencies and then they compress the frequencies. In other words, the portions of the, you know, like either high sounds or low sounds, and then they mathematically compress those so that it takes up a tenth of the space, usually. You know, the 128 kilobits per second is typically about one tenth. So the thing that happens is that if you save an MP3 of a loop, there's actually a little bit of inertia that happens before a waveform gets started. So what happens is that MP3s will typically have a bit of blank space at the beginning of a song. So when you try and make a loop using MP3s, it's actually very difficult. You'll almost always get a click at the beginning because there's a bit of silence before the MP3 compression goes like, okay, I know what frequencies are happening there. All right. So MP3s are not really good for doing loops. So we're going to be doing our loops in wave format, which is uncompressed audio. If you have any questions about like this, the technical audio stuff, just let me know. I'm sort of glazing over it a bit, but I'm just saying that we're going to be using uncompressed audio. All right, so now we get a beautiful waveform like this, hopefully, something like that. Seeing as it's modern music, it's what's called a pipe cleaner. It hits the dynamic range on the top and the bottom. If you picked out maybe some more classical music or something like that, then you wouldn't necessarily have this big round like this. This is what's sort of a problem with modern production techniques. So it makes the sound really loud and aggressive because it actually adds a bit of distortion. Every time one of these things really hits the bottom or the top, it actually adds a bit of distortion. So, but that's just the way that modern music seems to be produced these days. So, we're going to try and find a loop in here. This is a bit tricky. We don't have to be totally musical, but maybe what I'll do is I'll ask you to let go of the computer for a sec and just have a look up here. Because this is something that's... I'll try and give you a general idea of how to work it to try and get a good loop. All right? So what we really want to have is a section of sound that sounds okay when it repeats. Okay? In our case, we're going to be doing probably one bar's worth. For those of you that are musical, it's kind of like, in general, in Western music, it's like tapping your foot to the beat four times. Okay? Sometimes three times, but usually most of this music will be in 4/4. So, let's go... I want to find a section that I really want here. Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so it's like... There's the sound of the bar. So you want to basically cut, you know, where I'm putting my hand out. Right? So let's try and do that. So I hit the space bar to start out there. There's different modes. You're not used to Audacity yet, right? So I'll just give you a bit of a crash course in Audacity. Is that what you can do is that there's different modes up in the top left-hand corner. And I'm going to use the magnifying glass to zoom in. So you click and drag. And then that allows you to see the waveform closer. If you want to zoom out, you can hit the shift key and click, and that will zoom out to make the window twice as large. And then to do editing, there's this little bar guy here. I think you can see that, right? Okay, and you click on that, and now this allows me to change my position pointer the same way it would in Final Cut or iMovie or whatever. It's pretty standard for nonlinear editing. So now we can let this guy roll. So I put the pointer at the beginning, and then I just let space. Okay. In there. So here's. Okay. So. If you're paying attention, right, while I was listening to it, I was watching where the pointer was going, right? And then chop there, and then chop there. So we take a little bit more than we need. There it is. Okay. Nice. Okay, so I took a little bit more than I needed. And I'm going to just use the Apple Copy C, and then Apple N, to do a new window, and then Apple V to paste that in there. So if you wanted to go through the menus, what I did is I did Edit, Copy, right? And then I went New, and then here I did Paste. And then that created this window here. Okay? And now this is kind of like a bit of a rough cut. So I want to zoom in at the beginning of this and find out where that first beat starts out. So I'm zooming in. Am I zooming in? Whoa, that's a bit too close. Whoa. Okay. And move the pointer around again. Okay. Seems that it's right. Pretty much you want to start right where that guy starts. So this is where the kick drum starts. We got a lot of low frequencies. So that's where you get these things happening. And then when the frequencies are closer together, like a hi-hat or something, then it's more dense, right? You get more oscillations happening in there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to chop that bit off there. That's a bit of low frequency there that I don't want. And this is where the kick drum happens. And so I'm going to get rid of that stuff. And I'm going to use Apple X. Get rid of that. And now I need to figure out when it loops, where the end of this loop is. So let's zoom out. Okay. Zoom out. And this can be really tricky depending on what kind of music you chose, because there can be a lot of other stuff happening. I tried to pick a visually kind of easy example, so I can come around and help you if you're having a hard time finding your loop. Okay, and so there's another kick there somewhere where this guy happens. So let's zoom in here. And look at that. That looks sort of similar. This end part looks similar to what we cut off before. So I'm going to get rid of all this. Just do Apple X. Okay, and now I'm going to hit L to loop. Right? So that sounds good. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you don't. So what can happen a lot of times is that depending on where this waveform ends and the other one begins, you can get clicks, right? Where it's a drop in signal and it will produce a pop sort of sound. If the pop isn't really that loud, not so bad. But what we can do a lot of the times is that if we start out with something that's loud, like that kick drum, which is good, then at the end of it, if there's a pop, what we can do is we can actually fade this out. And I'll do that just to show you so that you can do that in your own loops. And so you just need to select like a little bit of the waveform here and effect and then fade out. And then we'll probably see that the end of that waveform gets a little bit, it gets sort of tapered off. So see that? It sort of went down a little bit. If I do Control Z, that's the way it used to be. And oopsies, that was bad. There. And now it goes down again. Perfect. I love Apple Z. Undo is good. Okay, so we're almost there, and what I'm going to do is take this one here, and I'm actually just going to put it right in the program. So we just need to go export as wave. Okay. And then if we navigate to the folder where here's the dance mix, right? And there's the main patch. And in here, there's four like folders, 1 through 4. And if we click into here, there's a whole bunch of WAV files in there, and I'm going to put my own in there, and it's going to be called OISO. And I go save. Okay? So now, if I go back here, okay, so there's Audio Loops 1, and then it's not there. What? What? Oh, I put more copies. That was funny. All right, it's over here. Sorry about that. Okay. Ah, there it is, right at the bottom. Perfect. So, I'm going to quit out of Pure Data here. Yes, I'm going to quit. And I'm going to just take these, and if we make another folder, sorry, this is a lot to remember, but I'll help you out. And just go like loops, just so we have somewhere to stick them. We can take out the loops that she made and just stick them into that folder over here. Okay, so now we've only got that one loop in there. And now if we open this, we should be able to hear our loop. Oh man, I hope this works. Okay.
Let's
see.
You didn't have to say anything about what channels they were on or anything like that.
Well, the way that I did that is that I put it in Audio Loops 1, so that means it'll go into channel number 1. Yeah. Whereas if I put it into a different channel, then it would go into a a different folder, then it would go into a different channel. So now when I play this, okay, that's all familiar. Let's. Oh, it's really slow, but maybe what we can. Ah, there we go. Great. So I changed the sampling rate, and it's all good. What's happening here? It's a bit faster, right? Well, that's because you can actually set the beats per minute, the tempo, and so we can change it to where we sort of want it to be. So if I take that and then. Somewhere like that, right? And then we can do distortion. Oh yeah. And, yeah. Fun. Grand. Okay. So now you try, and I'll come around the class, see how you do it. But yeah, you should be able to get one loop in there, and as soon as you get one loop in there, then the next loop is super easy, and the third loop, and then pretty soon you'll be taking over the world. Right? A loop at a time. Alright, who would like some help off the top? Yes. Yeah, this is something you want to kind of look at, because then you'll be able to hear your loop. Alright? So. When you load up the patch, you should start the patch and there should be an arrow here. Okay? So there's two modes in Pure Data, run mode and edit mode. Okay, right now we are in run mode and we want to be able to change the patch. So what we do is we do Apple E, and then once you move the cursor around, it becomes this little hand. Okay? Alright. Now, if you click and hold, you can see that it rubber bands to try and select stuff. So we could select that, which we really don't want to do. But what we can do is we can take this one, and it's great to be lazy with programming, is that you rubber band, so you click nearby it and then drag over it to select it. And then it becomes blue. Okay. Okay. So I did Apple E to get the little hand. And then from there, woo, it's a big hand now. And then you do the click near it and drag and hold to get the blue guy there. And I want to create a copy of that. Well, you know what, there'd actually be an easier way to do this. But nah, forget it. I'm gonna make it so that your patch still works with the old loops. Okay. And then we do, okay, is anybody stuck right now? Because that can happen. It's okay if you got stuck. Yes.
I don't have the 44 on
here. No, that's what we're going to add.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're not stuck. You're actually, you're hideously normal. So. Sorry. I have to throw that in there. No, I added that patch, and I forgot that the download one doesn't have that because there's no 44K samples in the downloadable patch. Okay? So that's what we're going to do, is that we're going to take this guy, click, hold, okay? And then we do Apple D to duplicate. Okay? And now I can take this and I can click and move it and drag it. Okay? Let's pretend this guy never existed, because it didn't for you. Okay? There you go. Yeah, and now if you click, you move that to somewhere where it's not overlapping stuff, and then you click onto it, you'll see that it's selected the number, right? And then we can just type in 44100, which is the sampling rate of the audio in general. Okay? And you too can have a box that looks like 44100. Okay? It's going to be great. Okay, now that we're done, we click out of there. And, okay. Is anybody stuck yet? So if you're stuck, it's okay. Otherwise, I'll come around and fix your patch for you. I don't mind. Because I said you wouldn't have to do any programming. And then from here, we need to connect this guy to this one over here. So what we're going to do is that we move the cursor until we get the little donut thing happening there. And then we're going to click and hold and drag. See how there is that, you know, like in the days of Pitfall. Okay, and then we drag this guy and we put it into the donut of the sample rate, S sample rate. And then we let go. We all need to let go sometimes. There we go. Perfect. All right. And we're there.
So what does that do exactly?
Well, right now it's done nothing so far. But it's pretty close to doing something. Okay, is anybody... I'll stop asking that. I'll come around and I'll help you if you're stuck. Okay, so now we have a patch. And I'm in edit mode, so now when I click on this, it still says, oh, you want to edit that? But now we actually do not want to edit. We want to go Apple E, back to run mode. Now it'll do something. If I click on this... It didn't look like anything happened, but I just changed the sample rate to 44,000 times per second rather than the default of 8,000. Okay? So now we should be able to hear... something. Yeah? So if you did add a loop there, hopefully it's at the right speed now. Okay. And I'll come around again. So sadly... You already know how to program. All right. So, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, to get this one. Although this class is meant to focus on audio, I think it would be good to show you a little bit of the video side. So I'm going to show you how to load in a video, and then that way we'll have a little bit of an idea of maybe how audio can work with video or work against video. So the way that the video here works is that it's a patch that I made, a very messy patch. Show you that, but if it worked, which this patch actually doesn't totally work, what it's meant to do is it's meant to tempo sync so that if you've got a loop here, that the video would actually loop in time as well. Right now, the mathematics is a bit off, so it doesn't quite work, but it still steps through video. And what this patch does on the video side of things is that it will take two different quick times or MPEG 4 videos, and then those are loops, and they will play at the same time, and it crossfades between the two of those, depending on where you set this crossfade or value as it steps through the sequence. So the way to look at the ugly bits of the video render remixer is in here. It's just below the sort of where our 44,000 thing was next to there, and if we click on that, you can see that it's fairly messy. So right now this is not playing any audio, so the video is just not really doing much either. But if we play audio, okay, is that it's crossfading between the video on the bottom and the video on the top, and then anywhere in between, it's a mix of the two. So see how it mixes? It crosscuts here between this one, and then it jumps to the other one. This one jumps to the other one, and it mixes between the two. It's like a crossfader, okay? Okay, and then you see here, it blends the two together, see? Blending, right? And then it just jumps between the two. So that's what that's doing. And, yeah. I have the BPM so that it reacts to BPM. Like, you'll notice if I change the BPM here, you'll notice that the speed slider here will actually... I can just work it. I got one of those laser pointer things. I have one. Aha, there we go. There, speed. There, that's what we're looking at. While I change the speed, the BPM down here, okay, the BPM here will actually affect the speed up here. Okay? So. And you can hear it, it's kind of doing some funky stuff with the loops. But you see that the mathematics are the wrong way around. So if I change the BPM, it actually makes the speed go down. Okay? And the slider over here that moves along here, where this guy is here, okay? This one here corresponds to the visual slider down here. Okay? So that one's stepping through, and you can see it's crossfading, right? And then it jumps to that video. And then it crossfades between the two. Okay? So that is that's what's happening with the video. Are there any questions there on what's going on so far, just from an operational standpoint? It is a messy patch. I used this one for an art project. It was for a Bhangra dance piece at the Surrey Art Gallery. And it worked all fine and dandy there, and then when I tore out this chunk and put it into this patch, didn't quite get it working just perfectly yet, but it is meant to sync together, but I haven't quite got it there. It wouldn't take that long to fix it. Okay, so what would be nice to have happen is that we'll have, you know, our loops, so we know how to add audio loops. It would be neat if we could change the video too. So let's go into, I'm going to use YouTube. Sure, why not YouTube? And okay, Windows. Okay. And I think I can just look at YouTube worms. Worms inside your face. Yeah, I had to look at that one. Let's take one of these guys, these wormy guys here. And I've clicked on this before to look at. It's like a little video of little animation of worms. It's kind of cute. So I'm going to take a loop out of here. Okay, so you can take any YouTube video and then just copy the URL from the top. And then I did ClipNabber, I think. ClipNabber.com. And it looks like that, ClipNabber. And then you should just be able to put the link in there and go nab. Don't hit the download or play now. Those are, they try and download stuff. Okay, so we nab. Okay, I'm going to trust the Java. It's working. Working. Have you used iMovie at all? A little bit? Okay. Alright. I might be trying to fit a little bit too much into the time that we have, but I did want to show you the video. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just go a little bit faster through the editing of video than I normally would. And then you just download it. So save file. Yeah, that's good. Okay, it's going to take 17, 16 seconds. So if you find really short clips, because most of these video clips, you only want them to be a couple seconds long. If you happen to find a YouTube that's a couple seconds long, then you don't have to edit it. I'm just editing it so that it'll work better with the playback. I'm going to take a couple sections out of this video that contrast each other, and then I'll put the videos in. That's really the same method as doing the audio, and then hopefully everything will work, and the world will be a better place. But we'll see. Right. So I got all this stuff running, and I don't really, it's just too much business here. Okay, quit. Yes, quit. Okay, so that went somewhere. I think it went into my downloads. Ooh. Downloads. There it is. Swedish massage. Not just, okay, worms, too. Okay, let's crop this. And then iMovie. Should be pretty easy. Like I said, I'm going to kind of breeze through this a bit faster than I normally would because we're going to concentrate on audio here. But we take the video, and we should just be able to chop it. Okay, so there's that. And then I go back to my downloads. And I should be able to drag and drop this somewhere. I find iMovie really confusing. I think I need to create a new... No, I don't. I'm not going to bother. I can create anything new. Let's just stick it in there. No, doesn't want to do that. Stick it in here. No, doesn't want to do that. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to import it. Import movies. Maybe that'll work. Bink. Downloads. There it is. Great, copying files, processing. La 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 la. Go computer. And where's my worms? There's my worms. Great. So then I can just select a few seconds out of there. And I'm going to trim that. Edit. Okay, copy. Paste. And that looks all fine and dandy. There we go. Angry worms. It's about 6 seconds long. And then I should be able to do share. Export movie. And I'm going to save it as an MPEG-4. Okay, let's do QuickTime. Export. Share. Export using QuickTime. And then see, I'm going to change it to an MPEG-4, put it on my desktop. This one will be called Worms. And, wow, 6 seconds. What is it thinking about? It's really thinking hard about those worms. I wonder if it's not doing all this stuff. It should just be doing that stuff at the top. Wow. That is really slow. Okay, and then all we need to do is just drag and drop that video into our folder. Yeah, of course. Of course it couldn't be exported. Let's try it this way. Mobile. Sure. Let's try that. Worms. Okay. There's that one. Okay, whatever. Seems to be happier with that. Okay. And now, I'm not going to put more than one in there, just for the sake of speed. And I should be able to stick this into our folder, into here, and then into the subpatch video, okay, and then into vids. Okay, and you'll see all the other iPod movies are in there. And I'm going to get rid of those, even though they're great. And that should work. So now, let me load this up. You should see the worms at some point. Let's see if this works. Come on, worms. I'm going to ask to cycle through this a few times. It's definitely happier having more videos in there. But the tricky thing is that the videos do need to be all the same size. Okay? That's something that you'll run into. Yeah, see, this is the, it's kind of fun in these files. It's not finding them. It's not happy about that. So maybe it requires more videos. Let me just fake this. Let me just duplicate this guy. Worms. Okay, let's try it again. Yeah, that looks good. So yeah, it works. Nice. And yeah, if we wanted to, if you had two different videos, which let's try that out. Okay. I think I should quit out of pure data here. Okay. And then if I do that, okay, so it'll go into here, and I have iMovie, and I happen to have some other videos as well. No, just get rid of that. Sure. There's this one. Oh, sure, why not? Everybody loves Samaria. Almost. Okay, so that's 40 seconds long. Let's just go like that. Trim to selection. Sure. So it's about 4 seconds long. There we go. There, that's nice. And I'm going to share that. Export using, or just the export movie worked for me. And going into here, desktop, where are my patches, like this. Subpatch video, down here to vids. And I'm going to call it Worms 2, even though it isn't. I'm going to replace that. Okay, and now hopefully we should have two videos that will be able to be played in there. So, let's go back to this guy. Open up the patch again. And you can see it takes a little bit of time for the video to catch. Not quite sure why. See if I can kick it over here. And one thing we can do is that you can change the speed. So see, you can see how it's crossfading between each other. If I wanted to, I can make these so that they both play. They're both sort of, you know, always at the same time, just by putting that crossfader value for all of these guys kind of in the middle. Oh, I know what's going on. And sometimes it will actually load in the same video. So it's actually crossfading, but it's crossfading to the same video, which is kind of boring. So let's try to get that to switch. There we go. There. That's a little bit nicer. Yeah. So as you can see, it's a little rough around the edges. Once you get into programming, you can make beautiful music and artwork like this. So if there's anything wrong, you're more than welcome to fix the patch. I have to fix this myself, so joke's on me. Okay? So, now, you can try chopping up some video, so you can put it into the vids patch, and you should be able to play video. Okay? So we can try that for a bit, but maybe what we'll do is sort of try and take it back another level, seeing as we're running out of time, and sort of start thinking about, you know, that really where the interesting stuff happens is when you start realizing where the audio and the video really work nicely together, when there's stuff that happens that you didn't necessarily expect, but that actually produces some really interesting results. And so for me, working with, you know, computers and digital art as kind of a medium, that's where I find the interesting stuff happens. So although I'm showing you all the technical stuff, it takes a bit of time, and there are, you know, there's people that have thought about this, obviously, like Brian Eno, and there's other, you know, game designers, like people that he's worked with, like, what's his name? Will Wright. It's the guy that did the design on Spore. So Brian Eno actually did the score for Spore. It's an electronic art. And then there's also designers like Shigeru Miyamoto, who did Super Mario. And so these are people that think about how graphics, audio, and interactivity come together with this thing for games, this gameplay. But really, it's this thing that can be used in other areas as well. If we take the context differently of video games, it really becomes, you know, like an installation piece or something like that. Where, you know, that's something that I've worked in as well. So, So what I'm saying is that if you're interested, you have to keep playing around with the patch. You know, you can put different audio into it, and put different video into it. And then if you really want to get some tricky stuff happening, like if you wanted to try and figure out how to make it like you're asking, how to make it so that, say, when you select this particular clip, that it always loops a certain section of it, you can actually do that using pure data. But then, unfortunately, it's like learning another language, like Italian or something like that. If you want to go to a different country, eventually, yeah, to really communicate properly with the machine, like, you know, we know how to change the graphics, we know how to change the audio, but it's hard to get the program to walk differently, to do different things. But you can if you learn how to do the tricky, you know, wordy coding that I was showing you there. Okay, so maybe any final questions? Yeah.
Are there templates and things like that that you can get started in?
Yeah, there are. So what I have done, to take it full circle, is that we can go back to the PDF that we had at the start of class. And if you go down to the end of the first page, you'll see that there's some resources there. And it's not the case that I'm trying to really, you know, say that pure data is the way of doing things. You can, there's all sorts of different languages. There's languages like processing. There's MaxMSP. If you really want to do tricky stuff, you can learn C++. You can do scripting in Python. There's all sorts of different things. And what I actually do in games right now, I don't actually have to program. So I have sort of done full circle. Like I started out programming like assembly level stuff, like really low level programming, and now I do like music reading, which I find more fun. So I'm not saying that programming is necessarily the way, but it's the same thing as going to another country, and if you learn the language, then you just it's so much easier, right? And it's a language that if you really want to enter that world, that it is pretty interesting after a while. You realize what the strengths are about it, and then also certain things that, you know, you don't have to learn everything about it. Just pick and choose what you want. And so I find that for me, PD or pure data has been a good entry point into that. So, yeah, there's a download. Here's a nice manual if you want to just sort of, this is a open source, you know, like a wiki kind of manual that people have put together. And, you know, you can just go through different things. Like it tells you how to install it, configuring. You know, here's the audio tutorials, like making a simple synthesizer. And, you know, it'll sort of give you a background to this. So if you download this, then you can have a look. And then it's like a notated patch. If you want to do video stuff, you know, there's some really neat video things that you can do. Like you can do 3D graphics within you know, in within Pure Data as well. So if we go quit and go, yes, really quit, I think I have some examples. From some of the student projects, there's this one car dance thing where it actually imports a 3D model, and you can rotate it in real time depending on the way that the audio is. Okay, so this is, you know, another thing that Pure Data can do is that you can have it generate 3D graphics, you know, in real time that react to audio. So if I turn this on, it's gonna. So you can make the car dance to the audio. Right. We change the. So it sort of nudges it around depending on the audio level. Right? And then as far as working your way, that's probably the best, is that Floss manual, just to get started. It's kind of nice because it shows like downloadable patches, and they're kind of notated. It's not quite as easy as learning, say, MaxMSP, where they've spent a lot of money, like it's a, you know, it's a for-profit company that's put that together. And the two languages are very similar. It was the same guy that started both of them, Miller Puckett. And so one version went for money, the other version went for more academia. As far as I know, Miller Puckett still teaches at the University of San Diego, like Southern California, San Diego. So he uses PD more for sort of acoustics and learning about how digital audio works. But people, you know, they do all sorts of weird stuff with it, right? So that's a good way to get started, is if you look at that PDF, it should help you a bit. And then, of course, if you'd like, you can also email me, and I can probably help you out. I don't necessarily have the answer to everything, but I'll try. So if you go to videogameaudio.com, and then I put my email way at the bottom here in small type, because I'm such a busy person and I don't have time for tons of emails, but for when I give a workshop, you're more than welcome to email me. I think I might actually have... No, I don't. I had cards at one point, but I left them in the car, I think. And, yeah, whatever, there's the titles that are working. But yeah, you can click on here, and then that's my email address. It's just info@videogameaudio.com. All right? So, yeah. Any other questions? Or we wrap up? So yeah, you know, this. Hopefully this gives you a bit of an avenue into having a piece of software that you can play with, and you know, you can add your own videos. Just add video. It's easy. It's not that hard. The hard part really is after a while figuring out how to really make those things speak to each other. Instead of, because I'm sure you've probably gone to, like, you know, art galleries and stuff, and you've gone and you've seen new media works, and you're like, you know, and probably even conventional art works as well. What is that painting about? To me, I like to try and make stuff that is accessible. And so to make things like something like Super Mario Brothers, that's like quite accessible, but I think it's also pretty amazing to be able to design something like that. Something that sticks around for a while and is still fun to play with and is still interesting for us, like, years later. Because it's easy enough to think of, you know, games of those eras being like, oh, it's amazing. But you have to remember there were, like, thousands and thousands of horrible games, right? So that's really, you know, where we're at now, is that a lot of people are producing digital artworks, but a lot of them, you know, it takes a long time to get good at it, right? So although you can see it's very easy to put audio and video together, it will take a while as an artist to try and figure out how to make those things speak to one another and speak to, you know, not just yourself, but to other people. So with that, I think we're good. So thanks.
Thank you, Leonard. Well, all right, we should all go.